Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, 204, Escape from Haven, Part 3, read by Mitchell Two. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, we might discover what appears on the surface to be opposites might in fact be two faces of the same thing.
I haven't even been in port for the last 6 months,
the man protested for the umpteenth time. He'd been in the room for 5 hours answering the same question, over and over. The protocol insisted on a minimum of 7-hour sessions. Based on pre-Haven statistics, 7 hours of repetitive questioning was the breaking point for 98% of interviewees. After that, they would admit to something, even a small infraction, to get out of the place. At least, this is what Odessa had explained to Gwen. Gwen wondered why port security suddenly seemed to have information and resources the inspector designate's office was never even aware of, let alone had access to. Wasn't she the top official for investigations? It felt like the tail was wagging the dog. After this was over, Gwen was determined to complain to the Central Council. Gwen wearily checked the interaction room's assessment on her desk's built-in screen. She was already tired of the process and wasn't even halfway through the list of possible matches. The current suspect squirmed in his seat as she intentionally paused, waited, then went back to the third question again.
Is that your original skin? There are genetic markers which will tell us, however, the testing process is rather intrusive and painful.
Gwen lied, as instructed in the script. There was no known way to distinguish between replicated skin and natural once the epidermis and dermis had bonded with the wearer's subcutaneous tissue. That wasn't common knowledge and something Gwen had only recently learned. The term wearer was a misnomer. A person didn't wear a skin, it became part of them. That was how the Haven escapee had slipped past port security.
It's the one I was born with, the man insisted defiantly. You've got my medical records, right?
He was rapidly losing his patience.
I've been cooperating, he emphasized the last word. I have a business to run. Will the Central Council compensate me for lost sales?
We're almost done.
Gwen knew the man would never be compensated, but said nothing and looked down at her screen. The AI was rating the possibility of the subject being the escapee as below 5%. She looked up at the man again, hiding her own frustration. Like all the others, he had been pulled off the street and detained until she could have a discussion with them. Some participants, like this poor guy, had been a guest of the Port Authority for several days. Many had threatened to simply leave, but she had managed to bribe them with gifts and promises, so they didn't realize their cooperation wasn't voluntary. It was central to the protocol. Everything in an investigation must appear to be voluntary. Gwen wondered what would have happened if one of the volunteers had tried to walk out. The whole exercise was a long shot, so as far as she was concerned, it wasn't fair to hold these people. But the Central Council insisted the exceptional circumstances justified exceptional actions. Gwen made a snap decision.
Okay, you can go, Mr. Torres. Thank you for your help.
She knew her decision could be challenged if the escapee wasn't found soon, but she didn't care. There were still 16 men in voluntary seclusion pending a discussion. She felt guilty, but they were going to have to wait a while longer. She had another avenue she wanted to pursue. Mr. Torres looked both relieved and put upon as he got stiffly up and made his way to the door. Gwen waited until she was sure he was well on his way, then turned off the hidden recording equipment and headed back to her office.
This isn't working. It's been months, Gwen complained. We can't just keep pulling people off the street. because the AIs have determined they vaguely match a physical profile. We need to find the escapee, Gwen, Odessa patiently reminded her. Central Council is very concerned about this incident. The longer they're free, the greater potential for damage.
Even through a camera lens, Gwen could see Odessa was doing her best to hold back her frustration. Port security had finally conceded they couldn't force the inspector designate to follow their direction.
I don't see the point in suspending the interviews while you retread old terrain, Odessa complained. I'll need to see the fruit stand proprietor and Melissa, the Haven attendant, again. Why? They're dead ends, Gwen. They're the only people we know who had direct contact with him. Maybe we overlooked some small detail which might be a lead. It's better than interviewing every medium-built, 1.7-meter-tall male in Hinterland hoping to find him. That's an oversimplification, Gwen. The AI also uses gait, posture, and mannerisms. The algorithm is very specific, but I don't have the authority to stop you. Although I can assure you, it's probably a waste of time and resources. Sure, have another conversation with the vendor, but Melissa is off limits. The attendant is in therapy. She's having trouble dealing with her feelings of guilt. We've been informed another interview might push her over the edge. Community health won't allow it, so you need to drop it. Is that why her contact info has been deleted? I've been trying to connect with her, Gwen objected. I keep getting contact not found. We've temporarily disabled her address, at her request. So if I were you, I'd stick to the AI suspect list. But as you said, the inspector designate can do whatever she wants, up to a point.
Gwen intuitively felt port security was holding something back.
Okay then, I'll start with the fruit stand video.
She sighed, but was determined to keep pressing for a meeting with the attendant.
Let me know when I can interview Melissa. That's between you and community health.
Odessa's image abruptly disappeared, leaving Gwen staring at her reflection on a blank screen. She scoured the fruit stand recording for the fifth time. There was something there. She was convinced of it.
What am I missing?
She whispered, then suddenly saw it. An action so natural, so insignificant, it would normally be overlooked. Carl had brushed the hand of another man standing next to him as he reached over to pick up a dropped slice of the peach he was sampling.
Got you,
Gwen laughed, then asked the AI to enhance the area of the image where Carl brushed the stranger. Just as she suspected, there were a few frames of a tiny skin sampler tucked discreetly between his forefinger and thumb. She immediately directed the computer to ID the stranger, then look for matches in the surveillance recordings from the area for the last few months. The AI took almost an hour to find two matches. One lived in the port. The other had apparently disappeared. She felt conflicted. She didn't like the idea the surveillance grid had been turned on, but she reluctantly admitted it had been useful. Carl was celebrating with his small but growing entourage on the patio of a pleasant family restaurant in one of the remotest districts of Hinterland. 6 months ago, he had convinced the owner of a robotic truck delivering wine from the district, west of the port, to give him a lift to the town. It was a new region, recently reopened for agriculture, after 2 centuries of environmental remediation, and grapes flourished there. Carl's family, on Haven, had thought of themselves as connoisseurs, but obviously, the enclave had been getting the best of Hinterland, Carl had realized, after tasting the local product. He supposed the wine sent to Haven only had to be good enough to keep the pretense going. There was nothing else to compare it to. Quality was relative. However, the quality produced in this region wasn't recognized or truly appreciated, which made it easy for him to worm his way into the community as a wine expert. He was also smart enough to not draw attention to himself. Ego had clearly been the Achilles heel of his ancestors. They had been obvious, clumsy, and boisterous in their display of wealth and arrogant in their application of power, which made them the target when the greater population demanded change. Since escaping, he had come to appreciate the hidden powers which now ran the world. No one here even knew they were being ruled, but they were, and he could see the signs hiding everywhere in the shadows. It was why he had chosen this new town to start his climb. The place lacked a surveillance grid. He assumed it had been left out to keep up the fiction of egalitarianism, but that would not be forever. He wondered what excuse would eventually be used to extend the system to the new communities. For now, its absence presented an opportunity, which he'd have to remove as soon as he was in power, so no one else could use a blind spot like this to ascend.
"Hey, Elias, you know how this works. Play your cards close to your chest, reveal nothing until you are in a position to act."
Carl prodded the young man he had manipulated into volunteering to be the regional council representative. Together, they had built a significant following in the community, convincing people they needed local autonomy to protect the interests of the new region. Everyone selected in the lottery had turned down the position. They were too busy expanding their vineyards to engage in governance. The community was relieved when Elias volunteered. It was this apathy, combined with the perceived benign function of the councils, which gave Carl the opening he needed, and Elias was the tool he would use to pry open the secret door to the real power behind Hinterland. He was pouring himself and Elias another glass of red wine to toast the young man's official acceptance of the position when he noticed a strange woman climb the stairs to the patio and start looking around. It had taken several days for the AIs to find a CCTV recording of Carl, disguised in the new skin, getting into a delivery truck headed out of town and off the grid. The truck hadn't been hard to track. Its GPS records led straight to one of the newly opened reclaimed regions. Initially, Odessa had wanted to send most of the port security staff to the small agro settlement, but Gwen had managed to convince her such a display of force would be seen as a heavy-handed tactic from the pre-Haven period. As a compromise, she went into the town with a flock of insect-sized drones a few meters above her head. They fed everything she did back to a contingent from port security discreetly parked down the road to ensure the escapee had no chance to flee. As she walked up a pleasant street to the local restaurant that reportedly was being used as a regular meeting place for disgruntled citizens, Gwen felt very uncomfortable. Disgruntled citizens hadn't existed before recently, and too many supposedly old, abandoned pre-Haven practices and technologies had been quickly revived. It was as if they had been secretly kept on idle for the last 2 centuries, which made her wonder if the office of the inspector designate was really just pretty window dressing for she didn't know what. The restaurant was at the crest of a moderately steep hill. Its patio looked out over neatly planted rows of grapes, cascading down the slopes in all directions. Someday, she hoped to come back and enjoy the pastoral scene. Gwen was still trying to catch her breath as she climbed the steps to a wooden deck, crowned with a pergola. She spotted a group of 5 people in the best seats shaded from the hot mid-afternoon sun. Carl wasn't hard to spot, tall and tanned from working outside. His body language suggested authority. Suddenly, he turned to stare at her, and she realized he knew who she was. He didn't panic. He just smiled and nodded confidently, which made Gwen's blood run cold. "Are you Carl Walton?" Gwen read from the script. At first, they tried to block her from interviewing the man. What was the point, Odessa had insisted. Her job was done. She had caught him. They knew how he had escaped, and the people in the town who interacted with Carl had been put into counseling.
"Like Melissa?" Gwen had noted sarcastically. "I still haven't been able to contact her."
Odessa had sidestepped the comment.
"Council has acknowledged you have the right to interview the escapee, although I don't know what it will prove."
That had been 2 days ago. Carl didn't answer her question.
"I know the script,"
he pointed out instead, then smiled knowingly,
I've been through it several times, remember? I'm supposed to deny being this guy Carl and insist I'm someone else. I'll claim it's a simple case of mistaken identity. Then you'll ask me again in a threatening tone. We can play the parts, or we can talk. I get the sense you're not like the rest of the zombies. You've got questions. You and I know there is more going on here. I can tell you can feel it in your bones. It's like the magnetite in a bird's brain. You can sense power, like a magnetic field.
I'm not at all like you, Gwen blurted out, then turned red. How could this guy know what she was thinking? How did he manage to get under her skin so easily? Is this why people like Carl had been sequestered in Haven? Was this why they hadn't wanted her to interview him? The questions cascaded through her mind. She told herself to stop and tried to get back on track. You haven't answered my question.
Okay, then. I suppose that means you want me to play my part.
He smirked.
Suppose I am this monster from Haven. What have I done? I made friends, got them thinking about their lot in life, got them questioning why Council gets to tell them what they can and can't do. If anything, I've been a positive influence. They're beginning to stand up for themselves, like that kid Elias, so they do more than vegetate on a hill pulling weeds out between rows of grapes. I wonder what will happen to him now. Think he'll end up as my new neighbor in Haven? Do you know what happens to hinterlanders like him, Inspector?
He stared at Gwen, challenging her. When she said nothing, he continued.
Your council is so afraid of being challenged, they vacuumed up and isolated everyone I've spent time with, like I'm a super spreader of some dangerous virus. Determination and ambition isn't a virus, Inspector. It's an integral part of a person's spirit. Although, in Hinterland, it appears to have become a disease that needs to be stamped out. They'll never let Elias serve on the regional council. They're afraid of him, now that he's been infected by me. But a disease is not that easy to eradicate. There are friends and friends of friends. The idea has been planted, Inspector, and they'll remember who pointed them in the right direction when the time comes. They'll want me back to lead them.
His last statement made a shiver race up Gwen's spine.
So, you're admitting you are Carl Walton?
Carl shrugged indifferently.
They told me how you found me. That takes initiative and imagination, something in short supply around here.
I like that. You could go a long way, Inspector. If I were in power, I'd make you council chair.
Council positions are randomly filled through a lottery. They're not appointed, Gwen corrected, letting her voice reveal how disgusted she was by the idea.
Are you sure? Think about it.
Things are too consistent, too intentional for some random selection process. A clear direction is the result of a single mind, or at minimum, a small elite.
Carl leaned forward.
Prove me wrong, Inspector.
The case was technically over, and Gwen was free to go back to her life until called upon again, which was a remote possibility. The escapee had been the first time the inspector designate had been called up in over 50 years, and she had only 2 left in her term. But before she vacated the office with its special powers, there were some things she wanted answers to. First, she had never managed to contact Melissa again. It was hard for Gwen to believe the woman had been so traumatized by the situation she needed to remain in seclusion at a long-term recovery center. To protect the woman, Port Security refused to tell her which facility she was in. Gwen had secretly checked all the admission records and found no one matching Melissa's description. Yes, it would have been horrible to find out you had been duped into aiding a criminal. Gwen could imagine the shame and guilt. But once you met the escapee, it was obvious how good he was at finding a person's weaknesses and exploiting them. His intuitive ability had even zeroed in on Gwen's growing questions about the system she was working for. The man's last comments had been like water seeping into the cracks of Gwen's belief in Hinterland, freezing there and splitting them wide open. She had gone as far as she could to locate Melissa without drawing attention to what she was doing.
before turning her attention to Carl's implied accusations about the Central Council. She needed to prove to herself he was wrong.
"I'm so happy to meet and thank you in person, Inspector Designate Gwen,"
the current serving council chair greeted, standing up as Gwen entered the modest office.
"I've been told your attention to detail and dedication saved Port Security weeks of interviews. On behalf of the council and the citizens of Hinterland, I'd like to extend our deepest appreciation. Please, sit down and make yourself comfortable."
Gwen took the offered seat. The scene was much as she had imagined when her request for a meeting had been accepted. Council was housed in an unpretentious building on the edge of the old commercial zone, which symbolically suited its role as a necessity rather than a seat of power. However, its utilitarian design now seemed to Gwen to mock the belief that Hinterland was something different than the long list of empires, kingdoms, and countries which preceded the creation of Haven and Hinterland.
"As I said, it's an honor to meet you. Thank you for coming,"
the council chair began.
"We all know how civic duty impinges on our personal lives, but service is at the heart of what we have created. Without citizens like you and me, randomly chosen to take on the burden of governing and monitoring, we would slip back to where we were before. People who only desire power, who would take control, and history is the story of how that didn't work. By accepting the great responsibility of civic service when we are called, we are creating a new story with a bright future. The world is just now, after 2 centuries, beginning to recover from the excess of the past. Not many people realize the Central Council has some leeway in the terms of civic service."
The chairwoman smiled before continuing in a softer tone.
"Port Security suggests this, and the council was unanimous. We feel you have already contributed more than enough. Gwen, we've shortened your term as an acknowledgement of the great contribution you have made. Your term is over. We've already asked the AI to run a new lottery for the inspector designate, and your name will be excluded from all future draws for service. You must feel so relieved now that the burden has moved on."
At first, Gwen was stunned, then suspicious. Had they noticed her use of the council record system?
I have some questions," she finally managed to choke out.
"Of course, please ask."
"I've been looking at the records for the lotteries and comparing the selected names for Central Council to genealogical records in the population database."
"Interesting."
The chair touched something on her desk screen.
"Please, tell me what you hoped to find."
"I wanted to see if there were any patterns," Gwen explained, determined to press on to confirm her findings, but losing confidence she was doing the right thing.
"And?"
"Well, everyone, including yourself, who has been supposedly randomly selected for the Central Council, can link their heritage back to 2 clans, both close offshoots of major Haven families. The selections are not random."
"I see."
The woman's voice had turned cold and menacing.
"Let me explain something to you, Gwen. To grow and thrive, a society needs order. And the way to accomplish that has never changed. Someone needs to direct things. It would be chaos otherwise, and we'd be extinct or living in caves."
Gwen heard the door behind her open and the sound of several pairs of boots rush through. Her back, legs, and arms complained as she picked up the heavy basket of peas and lugged them over to the mobile electric hopper. She noticed Melissa in the next row was already on her 3rd trip. The woman appeared to have grown used to the hard labor. At least Melissa didn't complain. It had only been 2 weeks since Gwen's inauspicious meeting with the council chair. Eventually, she assumed her muscles would adapt. Melissa had apparently been taken straight here after their 1st meeting. Initially, she had mistrusted Gwen, but had eventually accepted her story and came around. She explained to Gwen how the residents had worked out they were on the coast, about 6 degrees latitude south of Hinterland. The overland route back was blocked by a yet-to-be-reclaimed toxic wasteland, so the only way in and out was by sea. Ships docked once a week to pick up produce. Life, significantly more modest than in Hinterland, wasn't horrible in the agricultural enclave, she explained. You just couldn't leave. Some residents had considered escaping, but the melanocytes in their skin had been genetically altered to produce a green tint. So, what was the point? Even if you escaped, you could never hide. Gwen grunted with the effort of heaving her basket into the mouth of the hopper, then watched as the peas slid in. 2 weeks ago, she would have eaten those peas without knowing where they had been grown and why they were so cheap. 2 weeks ago, she believed she would prove Carl wrong.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To listen to other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com and check out Kyle and Dave versus the Machine. To prevent the apocalypse, Kyle Marshall and Dave Yoon watch films ordered up by a sentient machine. Or check out The Read Along, a mini book club for your ears. Find both and more at albertapodcastnetwork.com. Today's story was brought to you by ATB Financial. Today, I want to tell you about ATB's new podcast, The Future Of. Join Todd Hirsch, ATB's Vice President and Chief Economist, as he connects with special guests who offer unique and useful perspectives about the future. Explore how our economy and communities can not only brace for change, but embrace the opportunity it creates. From the future of women in business to the changing nature of work itself, The Future Of helps us understand what's coming and what we need to do today to get the tomorrow we want. Featuring 2 episodes each month, plus bonus episodes, The Future Of includes interviews with top community and business leaders from Alberta and around the world. Subscribe to The Future Of in the Apple Store, Google Play, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts are found. And connect to ask your questions about the future by emailing thefutureof@atb.com. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. To find out more about David, head over to davidhume.me. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.